CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. We go to Asia to our colleague Fraser Howie, co-author of Red Capitalism, The Fragile Financial Foundation of China's Extraordinary Rise. Fraser, a good day to you. In the Financial Times, the esteemed columnist Martin Wolf summarizes a recent trip to China that he met and a book written by a professor at Tsinghua University. Speaking of the present China, the troubles of the economy under Xi Jinping, and comparing it not to the Soviet system that fell apart, the fragility of the Soviet system, but in fact to the imperial Chinese system. We're in charge, but you take care of the local business. We're in charge here in the Forbidden City. What do you make of the presentation made by Mr. Wolf of the professor's book? Good evening to you, Fraser.
Hello, John. It was certainly a fascinating article, and I thought a couple of things sort of jumped out at you. I think to some extent there is an argument to say that today's communist China is more an imperialistic, dynastic type of China without a bloodline, but instead with the party line. It's certainly very different in that sense from the communist, the Soviet model of Russia. Although it's interesting, in that same article, the author David Lee in his book says that actually over a long thousand year period of dynastic history, the per capita GDP of the sort of average Chinese actually fell. Now, I'm not a big believer in these long-term GDP sort of historical analyses, but at the same time, that's hardly a great record to say, hey, it's really an imperial model, but actually the imperial model didn't work very well economically. And actually further into the article, they say, well, actually, it's different this time because Deng has changed everything through the reform period. So we have this rather contradictory picture of China being somehow ancient and following an imperial model, yet at the same time, now something completely different because Deng Xiaoping changed the economic rules.
Gordon, you have a question.
Fraser, I agree that long-term historical GDP analyses over periods which really weren't monitored very well to begin with really don't help us very much. But we do know one thing from the imperial period, and that is when Chinese emperors closed off China, it was followed by periods of economic failure and societal disaster. And what we're seeing in China right now is Xi Jinping closing China off. So we have witnessed this historical pattern before. What are your thoughts?
As soon as you started to speak, I started to nod because that's absolutely right. The sort of the high points of Chinese culture have been times where China has been open to foreign influence, foreign ideas, into trade, etc. And when China has struggled, and often when China has been geographically the smallest, what we should really say is the emperors of the Eastern Asian mainland have been the smallest, have been when China has been closed off. Remember, the Mongols ruled China as part of their empire. The Qing Dynasty, which everyone talks about being Chinese, of course, was actually Manchu. And a century plus ago, when people were trying to build a republic, they were, Sun Yat-sen and others, were very much against the Manchu. So again, China's history is not as simple as it would appear, but China has always prospered under openness. And under Xi Jinping, it's going the other way.
The deterioration of the economy. The professor, if I understand the summary by Mr. Wolf correctly, the professor projects that it is possible they're returning to where they came from, which is stagnation, extreme poverty, and helplessness. Now, that is a terrible future. What is the trade-off for that? What are they doing about that possible risk, to your understanding, Fraser?
Well, I think there's partly a danger of that, although I think it's difficult to see how China as a factory of the world of being so integrated into global trade somehow reverts to where it was 150 years ago or anything. So that's certainly not true. I think the difficulty is that, as we've talked many times before, is how does China move along the value-added curve and really move out of this middle-income trap type of problem? The economy over the past decade or so has been absolutely driven by one thing, and that is credit expansion, debt in the property sector, and then infrastructure, basically borrowing to build your economy and just do stuff. And the reality is that that needs to be unwound, and that is going to be very problematic. It's not something the government really wants to face. They understand the problems there, but they fundamentally don't have a solution to it because there is no simple solution. They've basically wasted their money on things, and that's going to basically hurt them in the longer term. Does it revert to mass poverty? Probably not. I don't think it's not reverting to those levels. The China growth has not been a mistake or just an aberration, but it's certainly going to be a much bleaker future going forward than what many projected even just a few years ago.
Gordon?
China just completed its annual meeting of its National People's Congress, and perhaps the most striking development came from their housing minister, who said that large property developers that aren't doing well must go bankrupt. What did you make of that, Fraser?
It's interesting. Well, of course, he's saying that after they already have gone bankrupt. So it's not as if he's predicting anything here. He's effectively just admitting to the reality that's out there. I thought sort of what's interesting about that is just the timeline of how this plays out, Gordon, over the past few years, is that, you know, you go back a couple of years, China Evergrande has real problems, but other companies like China, Country Garden, they're not too bad. 6 months ago, it's Country Garden has problems, but don't worry, other big companies like China Vanke, they're doing okay. And now we see China Vanke's debt being downgraded to junk. This is a rolling problem through the property market. There is a realization by the center that there will need to be bankruptcies and pain, but I don't think they're fully signed on to just really what that means, because such economic disturbance will have a political knock-on.
A letter to the Financial Times from this very useful and helpful column by Martin Wolf. The statement that Mr. Wolf makes, it does not try to run everything from the center, saying that was the imperial model and that is the Chinese Communist Party model. The author of this letter disagrees. I don't think you can sustain that statement. I know you're quoting the professor, but the bottom line is that she is running everything from the center. There is no autonomy on the ground. Everyone looks up to the dear leader and attempts to second guess what he wants instead of deciding and acting on what is practical and sensible. And the anti-corruption drives in a nation where corruption is endemic are selective. They look more like purges. I'll stop there because the professor is not dealing with the analogy that we've been seeing in the news for some time now, that this is a new Maoism. That is total control. And that I'm unaware that the imperial system could have worked that way. They just don't have the surveillance mechanisms that we have today.
That's certainly true. As you say, the surveillance mechanisms, the reach into the lower levels through party structures, through just, you know, internet control, a whole host of things. The comparisons are not really fair. I think this is why it's very difficult to talk seriously about whether it be political control or economics, when you've just got very different infrastructures connecting people, the ability to control people, literally turn them off electronically, as it were. I just don't think that's fair or is a useful sort of comparison. One thing I would say, though, is that whilst the control is certainly being centralized, what you're also seeing with Xi Jinping and the center, they don't want to take responsibility for solving these problems. So whether it be property developers, infrastructures, local government debt, the center isn't saying, give them to me and we'll solve this problem. They're saying, we don't want anything to do with them. You go and figure it out. So they're actually not, it's an odd sort of thing because they're obviously exercising power all the way down, but at the same time, they're not taking responsibility for the problems further down. And then you have the problem that those further down are being left with problems to clean up, but they're also scared to take the initiative because they're worried what the center is going to say. So this, you know, this is not an efficient model of government at any level. And I think we need to realize this. There's a reason why these problems develop in China, because their accountability systems and responsibility systems are extremely poor.
Gordon, your comments on Martin Wolf's column, we have about 30 seconds. Did it strike you this is a defense of the Chinese Communist Party, a rationalization of it? And it's significant that the professor's at Tsinghua, which I think means he's vulnerable to retaliation. Is that all important for to read this column?
Yes, any political commentator inside China is subject to retaliation and knows it and affects his or her views. I think the issue here is what Fraser talked about, and that is control. The message we got from the just concluded National People's Congress meeting is that there is going to be far more central control in China. And I think Martin Wolf needs to understand that.
Fraser Howie, co-author of Red Capitalism, The Fragile Financial Foundation of China's Extraordinary Rise in Asia. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.